Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to try and have a serious interview with this man. I actually have respected this man for many, many years. I've never been in a position to actually tell you what he did to me, and it was not his fault, but I'll tell you my first encounter with this man. I was topping the bill. I'd just done a big TV show, and I was topping the bill at the Viking in Blackpool. The owner of the Viking said, I've got a pal of mine who's a comic, and I'm just going to put him on for 10 minutes before you. He did 45 minutes. He tore the place apart, and I died on my backside after him. I've always wanted to get that out of my system. Stan Boardman, how are you?
I have peace. Yes, I'm sorry, mate. I didn't stay on
time.
No, it wasn't.
Wasn't it?
No. I met you in 1963-4 at the Cabin N Club in Slater Street.
I didn't know you used to come up there.
I used to go up there. You were the disc jockey there.
Yeah.
You were a young lad putting on, and then you sat on a swing. And there was a swing in there.
That's right.
In a club.
Yeah.
In the middle of the room.
Yeah.
And you were swinging on it.
Yeah.
Right, and a fella.
I did not know you were a member of the Cabin.
I wasn't a member. I bunked in with my mates, Colin Bridge, and the lads.
I'll tell you what, Stan. We're going to do a nice long interview because I want to talk to you a lot.
Okay, mate.
Let's talk about Colin. Because Colin, sadly, has passed away. He was very important in your life. He was a great mate. You gave him the greatest send-off. Tell us about your relationship with Colin, your friend.
Well, Colin Bridge used to be my mate. Met him in the 60s when we were playing for Skemmersdale United. Colin was in the first team and I just signed on. I got into the first team. Then Skemmersdale got to Wembley. And they played Enfield in the final. It was a draw. Alan Birmingham missed the penalty. There was 80,000 people at Wembley. And Skem was sort of the underdogs. And they did fantastic. And I got to the gate at Wembley and got in anyway. After the match, Colin saw me outside. He said, why have you got a red emblem on your shirt, on your coat? He said, we're playing in blue. I said, I got married this morning. So I got married that day. And went. Funny enough, I got married at 12 o'clock and I went to Wembley at 3 o'clock. I just sneaked out the reception for a few hours. My missus came from London, so obviously I got married down there and I went back to the house and it was quite a miserable day. It was a good day, but it was a miserable day because, you know, Skem never won. And, it was happy because I got married. But all the people that I knew down there weren't my friends, you know. It'd have been better if they got married in Liverpool. But anyway, it wasn't. It was in Tottenham and with all the relations. Anyway, about 10 o'clock, at 9 o'clock at night, the door, knock on the door is Skemmersdale, half a Skemmersdale football team, all coming with Colin leading them into this little council house in Tottenham. How they found it, I'll never know. They'd been downtown, they'd been the West End, they said, come on, let's go and support Stan. And they all jumped on a taxi and, you know, five of them all came to my wedding. And we all, funny enough, that night, I slept with them in the big double bed. My missus always say that on a wedding night, I never ever slept with my husband. So I slept with all
the... Was he a comic or was he a frustrated comic?
Colin was a comedian. He was the funniest man I ever met. And I've met thousands of them. I could always sit back in a pub, in a club, anywhere and just watch him. And I knew his act back to front, but I'd laugh at every second of it, every line that I'd heard from him for the last 50 years. I used to love it. And he'd entertain people. I mean, he's entertained you loads of times.
Oh, yeah.
I remember being once, little story, we were in the Grafton and he was doing a magic, he used to like to do magic tricks. And we just finished a Variety Club dinner and there was about 100 fellas having a drink in the bar. So Colin said, I'm going to do some magic. And his favourite one was egg in the bag. Egg in the bag, Colin, we used to call him. And make an egg disappear. Well, you know, a normal magician would take, well, about 2 or 3 minutes to do this egg in the bag. Colin did 45 minutes and finish up with his kecks around his ankles. We did one once, which he was on the line most of the time. I'll tell you why, he used to get a watch off somebody. Anyone got a watch? So a fella, daft bugger in the oars, he go, yeah, there's a watch. So he gave him the watch and he put it in the egg in the bag. The bag, instead of the egg now, it was the watch in the bag. And he got a bottle and he smashed the watch, and obviously it was going to come as new. But Collins never came back in bits. He said, "Hey, mate, here's your watch." And the fella said, "Hey, that's £2,000 watch." Anyway, everyone was laughing. The fella couldn't do nothing about it. And we all walked off to the next pub. So I don't know that fella. Honestly, God.
For real?
For real. Yeah. Smashed it to bits. Yeah. And but 100 people would laugh. And one fella was crying. So, you know, this is it.
Just to finish off with Colin, because we could make a whole show.
Oh, I could talk about Colin forever. He's been my best mate.
Talk about his farewell, because it was a hell of a service, wasn't it? I believe it was amazing. Everybody got up. You had a surprise outside.
Yes, it was unbelievable. And that's the way he would have wanted it. He wouldn't have wanted everyone to be sad. He wanted everybody to be happy. He's led a life. He was 70-odd, and he's sort of saying to me, he says, "Stan, I've had enough now, you know, the pain and all that." He said, "I've got to go," he said, "and I won't be here in the next week," you know, and he was right. And anyway, the lads all got together, and the mates that he's had, there's the same mates that he went to school with, same as my mates. Same mates. We played five-a-side football in Eton Leisure Centre every week. We played Woolton Leisure Centre. We played all over the place. We played charity football matches. He formed a team called the Over the Hill Mob. We were all over 50 them days, and he went all around Liverpool playing. And everybody would know, yeah. Colin Bridge. Everyone know him. And anyway, the church, the thing was, we got over there and we weren't going to make it miserable and sad. It was, we're going to, you know, sort of, what do they call it now? They call it
a celebration
yeah. of his life.
How long did you do?
Well, I'll tell you what happened. First of all, we got Peter Heron. Peter is a good friend of Colin's. Peter's been round the clubs for years. You've known Peter. He's a singer. He sings all over the place. Then we got another fellow, Tony Barton. He got up and he did a few things. He used to stay with Colin. And then we had, who else came up? The priest was brilliant. The priest, he didn't know what was happening. The priest was, he was there. He didn't know what was, he was looking around.
Egg and bag.
I got up and I did egg in the bag. Yeah.
And I believe the priest was hysterical.
The priest, well, they were all laughing. All the priest and that, they were all laughing. And all the people who were around the priest, they were all laughing. And when I got the egg, I said, "Egg in a bag, egg in a bag." And what Colin used to do was throw the egg to anybody in the audience, and he'd throw it back, and he'd throw it back again. And it went like that for about three or four times. And then he'd say, "What kind of an egg is it?" And he goes, "I don't know." He says, "It's a chucky egg." So I said, So I said that to the priest, right? I don't think he got it. Like, but the audience.
Now, what was outside?
Craig Johnson. But just before I tell you that, Craig Johnson, his daughter got up at Chelsea, and they used to live next door to Colin. And Craig's is had a, for anyone who doesn't know, Craig's had a bit of cancer on his cheek. It's like myeloma, some, yeah. And he's had all his cheek ripped off and zapped and put back again. So he's had it done twice now, and that's in the last couple of weeks. So, you know, wish Craig all the best. Look, Craig Johnson used to play for Liverpool. Everyone knew him.
Nice fella.
Fantastic. Nice fella. Colin used to call him the headless chicken because he used to run around all over the place. Chelsea did a great speech there, you know, which the sentiments of what Craig Johnson, he says he was one of my best mates. And he was crying over the phone. But, you know, yeah. After that, we tried to get rid of that away. And then we got out. Obviously, it was 2.5 hours in the church, laughter. Of all Colin's gags, Colin's jokes, memories of what Colin, the things he used to do, thousands. We'd have been there for 4 weeks of the things that Colin used to do. And we get outside. Me and Colin used to have a tipper wagon years ago. And the lad came around the corner with this 15-ton tipper wagon, right? And on it was Colin in flowers, just a tipper, right? Not a hearse, yeah. A tipper wagon on the side with all his jokes and everything in it. And it was absolutely...
That's the nicest way. The nicest way. And he was a nice man. I'm privileged to have known him.
Yeah,
he was a great guy. So, Stan Boardman, you are a million laughs yourself. Before we talk about your childhood, was Butlins the big break?
Yes, I was I was working around the clubs in Liverpool doing a few little things. The Montrose Club, people like that. Ernie Mac helped me quite a lot. He'd say, come on, Stanley, go on there. I'll give you £2 for charities. he'd give you £2 and a meat pie. we sort of go from there. I remember doing the Montrose Club, and Ernie Mac used to have two clubs, Montrose Club and the old Montrose Club, the one up by Anfield. One was at Shield Road down that way, and the other one was up at by Anfield Football Club. And he said, you went down well, here's your £2. Well, and it was an afternoon thing. It was all old age pensioners in, and they were brilliant. All the old age people laughing. They used to get the pies free and the scones free and all that. And Ernie used to look after them. And he said, I want you to do the old Montrose Club next week. Wednesday, he said, I'll give you another £2. I said, that'll do. So I went up there, blah, blah, blah. The curtains, ladies and gentlemen, stand up, and the curtains open, and this two Alwell in the front went, oh, he was at the Montrose last week. He was crap. So, you're allowed to say that now, aren't you? I don't know.
You can say that now, of course.
But it was a Liverpool saying, yeah. And you know, and you had to fight through that, and that made you tougher. And then I went to Butlins. I was on the dole, funny enough, and I went to Butlins, and I only had 3 days off to, you know, money to go to Butlins. You could book it daily, and I took the kids. It was raining, rain for the 3 days. And there's a big room there, and they do saying, come in there, come and get out the rain. We went in, it was a theatre, and there's a red coat up there asking for acts for the night. They said, any dads or mums can sing and do anything. It was a little bit like X Factor, you know. And anyway, my kids stood up, and Paul and Andrea, they were about six. They said, my dad can tell jokes. And anyway, that was me. I was dragged out. I got up there, told a few guys. He said, you're on the show tonight. I said, well, I've got no clothes, you know, and a pair of jeans and a shirt. So he said, I've got a shirt for you and a dicky bow. So that was it. And I used to always wear that. That was my lucky charm, a dicky bow. So every show that I used to do after that, I had a suit on and a dicky bow. Not like the kids today who wear all bloody clothes, you know. But I won it. And then I went to Minehead for the quarter final. Then I went to Bognor Regis for the semi final. Then I went to another place. And in the end, I finished up at the London Palladium. On the dole, London Palladium, and I won £1,000. Colin was there, my mate Colin Bridge, he was there with all my mates, and Ray, who used to drive the lorry. I think them days he drove the lorry with all the fellas in the back down to the London Palladium.
Stan, do you get annoyed when you see comics these days in the respect that you and I are from a different school and you have to, you just told us a little fraction there about Colin and you. It's all those life experiences that make you who you are, make your comedy, make your stand-up, make the way you control an audience.
Yeah, I think the way you go through life, especially in Liverpool, which is, it's a wonderful place, but it's a rough place and it's a tough upbringing. If you be brought up in Liverpool, you can live anywhere in the world. That's what I say anyway. And the humour that is there in the devastation that we've had over the years, Liverpool was never, was never as it is now, where we get visitors coming in. Nobody would, in the 50s and 60s, would want to come to Liverpool and visit Liverpool. It was a cold, dark, dingy place. And we used to go downtown, and there was about 3 or 4 clubs, that's about all. And everybody would go in them clubs, and we'd meet each other. And we were friends in Liverpool, from people from Toxteth, from Scotland Road, from Eitner. We'd all meet there. We'd go in the same ones, the Uglies, the Beachcomber, the Down Club, but the Key Club. There was even one called the Plug Club. They give you the plug. It was the Sink Club. That was it. And they give you a membership card with a sink plug on it. You had to walk around Liverpool with a plug in you. So yeah, they that's part of being brought up in Liverpool. My mother.
It was very important.
Very important. Very. We got, as you know, we got bombed out in Kirkdale Road, bottom of Everton Valley, We were all in the shelter. I was 3 and a half. All my family were in there, the babysitter, the Monroe family, and we're all in the shelter. I mean, the sirens, there's a long story, this one, but the sirens were going, we all run from the house. Mary Monroe, my babysitter, she was 14, picked me up and dragged me into the shelter. My mum got there with her Ada, my sister, in her arms, and with dragging Tommy along. Tommy was 7, and we sat in the shelter, and the next minute the shelter was blown up. And everybody in the street was killed on one side of the shelter. The girl who had older me, Mary Monroe, she was killed. I assumed that she had older me, and she fell on me, and all the bricks went and hit her on the head. And my mother was unconscious, and her head was all gashed out. She probably saved my sister, cause she, but me, Tommy, who was sitting by himself, was killed. And that was, my dad was away in the army. Funny enough, he was down in London in Woolwich. He was in the Royal Artillery, and I often think what happened when he got the telegram to say that his house had been blown up, his shelter had been blown up, he's lost his son, and all the family are all over the place. We can't find him. Anyway, we all finished up in Stanley Hospital, I think it was, and I often think about my dad. He had to get back from Woolwich. In them days, it wasn't 3-4 hours on the train. It could have taken him 2 days to get back because of the devastation and the blowing up. So what was in my dad's mind as he came into Lime Street Station, seeing Scotty Road all blown up, or Liverpool in ruins, and the smoke billowing out of all the buildings, walking along Scotty Road, gets into Kirkdale Road and sees where our house was, gone. The street's gone, shelter's gone. Then he's got to go and find us. And we were in Stanley Hospital. And then he's been told that his son's been killed, age 7. And I just can't... He never spoke about it. I just wondered what went through his mind. He was a very quiet man, never had a car, had a bike. And what went through my mother's mind?
Yeah.
And my mother... was under the shelter, under the debris, pulled out by the wardens. We were all pulled out. We were probably... And every time I feel grit in my teeth, goes back to that day when I looked around when I was 3 and a half and seeing just morning was coming up. I always remember the sun sitting on a slate and someone picking me up from out of the debris and throwing me on this slate. And that was... I must have gone unconscious after that, and I didn't remember any more from that. And then my mother had to pick up her life, and my dad, with nothing. Finished up in Hyden, Dovecot, in a council house in Dovecot. And, you know, luckily enough, my mum had more kids. So finished up with about 7 kids more. And my dad, just my mum, quite happy in Dovecot, which was a lovely place to live. Parks, swimming pool.
Everything you'd had. I'm talking to Stan Borman. Stan's coming to New Brighton. It's a one-man show, isn't it?
Well, yeah, we thought we'd do this because technology's changing now and comedy's changing. Obviously, you know yourself what comedy has changed. We do now the O2 arenas, and we have 10,000 people watching shows, and they have about 20 screens up and things like that. So the old time days of when Victorian times, when they used to have the people used to, no television, no radio, they used to go to the theatre quite a lot. And the theatres were probably around about 1,000 seats or so. You could probably see everybody on the stage. You could practically touch them, and they had the boxes at the side. And then them days, the theatres are fantastic, and that's what a comedian likes. A comedian likes a nice close to stay, the people as close to them as they can. The O2 arenas, they're not for me. That you're not in contact with your audience, and they are watching a screen, by the way. They're not watching you.
They paid money to watch a screen.
Well, I think it's ridiculous. It's 50, 60 quid to go in and watch a screen. Why don't you just go and buy the video for 8 quid, 10 quid and watch it at home in your comfort? The same thing.
So what's the show going to be based on?
It's, some of the stuff that I've told you about today, photographs and stuff like that. It's just a pity that I haven't got any photographs from, just after the war. Nobody had a camera. Yeah. I have a few little photographs of my mum. home, Tommy, the lad who got killed, my brother, and when we were about five, when he was about five or six, and I was about one or two. Anyway, I've got them. And the funny thing about it, nobody had a camera. Everybody in Liverpool went to a place called Jerome's in London Road, and there's one shop. It was like a sort of studio. And every man and his dog in Liverpool, if you've got photographs from 1940, it'll probably be from Jerome's.
Wow. So you're doing a serious show and comedy. You're doing two halves.
Yes, basically, I'm not going to do it too serious. No, I'm going to make it very enjoyable, very laughable. Bring back memories for Liverpool people, things that used to happen years ago, and also football career and my friends in showbiz.
Now, why have you wanted to do this? Tell me.
We did an audience with the comedians about 2 years ago. I think you came to that one.
And it was a sensational night.
It was a great show. So we thought, well, you know, we've got so much material now from that. We can now just change it a little bit. Do a comedy of about 45 minutes and then do a screen on stage where everybody can see and questions and answers maybe. And also me talking about, I mean, people will ask me questions about the Des O'Connor show. People will ask me questions about things like that, and Oliver Reed and Georgie Best and Morecambe and Wise. And I've got photographs and clips of them, me, and the shows that I've done.
And so is Paul going to be hosting
little stories? Nobody's going to be hosting it, no.
So who'll be asking the questions and answers?
I will have a microphone in the audience, and anybody who comes along can ask any question they like. And I'll just.
It sounds really nice, this, Stan.
The questions are going to be. I will not avoid them questions until I'm actually there live. Yeah. So I don't know what questions they're going to ask me, but I'm going to try to answer everyone honestly.
And this is in May, isn't it? At the
May the 16th,
New Brighton.
New Brighton, yeah. One of my favourite places. It is like a theatre. Yeah. It's you can see the stage from anywhere ever you sit. Not like the old one, which had pillars in front here, we used to wear. And the theatre's fantastic. And it's do you know what? It's a family theatre. The people who are there are still there. From 30, 40 years ago, 50 years ago. And, you know, there's Sandy and Viv who were at the box office. And you can talk to them on the phone. You pick the phone up and you talk to them. Not like you go to some of these websites, you go blah, 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 blah. And you don't even get through and you don't know if you're getting conned. Us older people just like talking to people on the other end of the line.
Stan, are you nervous about it?
No.
Excited about it?
Pardon?
Excited?
I'm excited about it, yeah. I'm really excited about it. We've been working on it for quite some time, getting the photographs together, getting the clips of Bernie Manning and Frank Carson, Charlie Williams and people like that, actual clips, which are very funny. We've got the rights to the Des O'Connor show, and the Des O'Connor was when I told that famous joke about a German aeroplane.
Were you set up?
Of course, I wasn't set up, and I'd have done it again. If Des O'Connor said, "Would you do it?" I'd still do it again for the amount of publicity that was there. I think it was stupid, really, that everybody jumped on what I said about a German aeroplane, and it was only the name of the German aeroplane. And do you know the name of the aeroplane?
I do indeed. It was a Fokker.
Thank you very much. And I'm not saying that because I've had so much stick. But Des O'Connor in the dressing room said, "Yes, Dan, I like that joke." He said, "I have heard it before." I said, "Yes, it's, you know, but I've just changed it round to suit me." He said, "Do it." He said, so I said, "Okay." He said, "But be very careful." So I said, "Well, how can you be serious with that? You know, because it's a German aeroplane."
But if I'm right, and correct me if I'm right, if it had worked, he'd have got the glory.
Yes.
I presume because it went a little bit negative that they stepped back a bit.
I think what happened on the night, I when I told Des this joke, there was two fuckers in the sky.
Yeah.
But because the audience were electric and everyone was laughing, yeah, it's unbelievable. You, as a comedian, you tend to go on a little bit longer.
Yeah.
So instead of being two fuckers, there was a squadron of them in the end.
But it
so
was, that I was remember the night, by the way. Yeah. I'll never forget that performance as long as I live. It was it was a piece of history in the world of comedy, because comedy is comedy.
Yeah.
And you were talking about a fact, and then the punchline, which we can't use, is, and I'm sure you all can imagine, the word. But if you go on the night to the Floral, I'm sure you'll get the correct pronunciation without any shout out.
Yeah, definitely, 100%. Yeah. The funny thing about it, I mean, after that, was, as you say, it was in all the papers. I was on Sky News even, was, and all that sort of thing. So it gave me, I mean, I did a show 3 weeks later in Cardiff, and the fellow said, you know what, Stan, before you went on the television, I had 2 days booked. I booked you for a week. He said, the day after it, he says, I was sold out. Yeah. He said, I could have sold out for a month. Yeah. He said, so keep doing that gag. I said, okay, thank you very much. Yeah. And the funny thing about that joke is that 10 years later, I'm going through London, and there's these placards in London, Regent Street, and everywhere saying, new film, Meet the Fockers.
Yeah. Fantastic American movie.
And it's gone on forever.
Yeah. Absolutely incredible.
And I'm the one who got the stick.
Yeah. Absolutely incredible. But that's the difference in times.
Yeah.
You know, where once upon a time, you couldn't have said bloody to Butlins. You'd have been sacked.
Exactly,
instantly.
Yeah.
So comedy has changed ridiculously. Stan, you as a person, you're an interesting person. You've got a beautiful home. You spend a lot of time on the land, which I honestly believe keeps you young. You really love your garden, don't you?
Yeah, I, well, to tell you the truth, when I lived in Dovecot and Peacefield Road, we had this little tiny garden with an air raid shelter. it was Anderson's shelter, which my dad put chickens in. And from then, growing up from there, and going to Dovecot Park, which was my place to go. I went every day in the school holidays. There was a lake there, a pond there. It was done for all the people of Dovecot. It was great. Dovecot was a fantastic place. We had wonderful shops. No wooden frames on the windows or shutters. They were all completely open. We had a lovely church, the Holy Spirit's across the road. We had St. Margaret Mary's. We had our own baths, Dovecot baths. We had a fantastic picture house, which was called the Granada. And it was sixpence, and we were all part of the sixpenny club. Hang on, that's a phone. Hang on. Okay, that was Paul McCoy, my own mate. Anyway, we had the Granada, and on a Saturday, every kid in Highton would queue up to watch a cowboy film, and it was the Saturday afternoon pictures. Sorry for that.
No, just switch it off, I'm not.
I don't know.
You don't.
Technology. And, funny enough, I put it on.
So they queued up to watch the.
Yeah, funny enough, I went into a chemist the other day. I said, because he had a sty, I said, can I have an iPad? And it cost me 430 quid for a bloody iPad. Anyway.
Stanley, let me stop you there, because I want to say something. You just threw that in, which was great. You and Paul, and Paul's inherited it from you.
Right.
Some comics, I'm a comic that tells gags. You're a comic that writes, which is, you really are an amazing writer. And some comics can write, can't they? But some comics can't. I can deliver. I can't write.
No, I'm writing all the time.
All the time.
I have a pen and pencil with me in the car, in my back pockets, on the side of my bed. Any little ideas that I have, I write them, always write them down. And I come up with some really great ideas, and they get used. I came up with an idea of finding the shirts of 66, the World Cup shirts. I thought, because I do a lot of shows and charity shows, and we find out that Stephen Gerrard's shirt going for £1,000, you know, Carragher's shirts, £1,000, Rooney's shirts, you know, in Manchester, you go for £2,000. And I thought, why don't I look for the shirts of 1966 when we won the World Cup? Alan Ball and all that, and Jeff Ayres. And I set out to look for them. Went all over the place. Went to Germany to see, because we played Germany. We beat them. We beat the Germans, which was fantastic for me. I went over on an aeroplane, but I can't tell you the name of it. And Anyway, I got I found out 7 of the shirts. 3 of them I know, but I can't tell anybody where they are. But I found 7. And we got it on, and I presented to a guy down in London, and he said, "Who's got this?" And I only had 2 pages. I said, "Nobody." He said, "I want it." So it was a big company down in London, ITV. Anyway, it got 6.5 hours on Sky. So that was. Now I've also written a few other things which are in the pipeline.
So you're always writing.
Always writing.
Stan, this show you're doing in May on the 16th at the Flora in New Brighton, which is going to be a great evening. So it really sounds like a night you're going to come out everyone and go, "Wow, that was."
I hope so. I really hope so.
Really, because it's a journey of comedy, but a journey of your life, journey of the days, the early days in Liverpool. Tell me. How are you going to finish a show like this? Because you're famous, like Doddy, for going on forever. And it is hard to finish, isn't it? Because when you're up there, you're going to be taken on a journey yourself, so you're not going to want to come off that stage.
To tell you the truth, I haven't even thought of that. Thanks, Pete. You've got me worried. Yeah, I mean, once you're up there, you know, you reach a peak. And all respects to Doddy. I think Doddy is fantastic. He's one of my heroes, and I love him to death. But, you know...
5.5 hours is too long.
It's just a bit... I always say that...
10 minutes too long.
But he likes that. That's his reputation, and good for him, and there's not a lot of comedians can do that. I try to reach to a peak, and once a... starts going down a little bit and the audience are getting a bit ready, you feel it and you go, "Hang on, this time to finish," you know. Usually I finish off with strange enough, I wrote a song called in 2008 and it got to number 15 in the charts and it was the World Cup song.
So you think you'll finish with that?
I'll probably finish with "Aye Aye Yippee, the Germans bombed our chippy."
Tell me how personal you're going to get with your family. Because, you know, there's a lot of private stuff there that never made the papers. You're one of the lads. Good crack. You like a laugh. You like a joke. You love a drink. How close is it going to get?
I don't think that I'll sort of do the fights that I got into in Liverpool. I don't think I'll go into that sort of thing. I don't think people want to hear all about that growing up in Liverpool. I don't want to give them the negative side. Right. Everything is rosy as far as I'm concerned. In my life, I've lived a fantastic life from a bad start. And I always think that God up there has looked down and says, "Well, we'll make a little bit better for that lad." You know.
Tell us about your mum, because you always talked about your mum and you still do.
Oh, she and people come up, even last night, we were doing a show in Runcorn, the Holiday Inn, the other night. And a woman came up to me and said, "How's your mum?" My mum passed away 12 years ago. I said, "Oh, yeah." She said, "Your mum," she said, "I can't thank her so much." She said, "We were at the bingo and I told her that, you know, we were having a bad time and she brought some clothes in for my kids." She said, "I have 4 kids." She said, "And your mum wrapped up all the clothes she could find and brought them into the bingo and gave them to her." That was my mum. My mum was always helping people, and she used to have a stall on Paddy's Market, so she had it really rough. I used to go down to Paddy's Market and put the trestles up for her, and then I could go and play football then. And then my sisters would come along and they'd start serving, you know, stuff. And my mother has been working all her life, bringing up 10 kids, being a mother, looking after my dad.
A real Liverpool family.
A real Liverpool family, yeah. And, you know, ration books and all that. We had chickens in the back garden in Duffcott laying eggs. So I used to go out and get the eggs and give them to my mum. And then she cooked them. I mean, I must have been brought up on eggs. And then my mum used to go to bingo and bring people back to the house. They used to, people in the big, "Come on, get back to our house." And she'd always open, it was a big thing, a tin of salmon. And they'd all sit round and eat it. It was, I mean, that was the best food you could have.
Well, of course, that was from that day.
Yeah.
Salmon was on a Sunday, if you were lucky.
Oh, a tin of salmon was... Come round to my house and we'll open a tin of John West salmon. Yeah. Oh, bloody hell.
It is a different world. Yeah. You've been incredibly successful and you've got I've got to say it again, because you've got a beautiful family, beautiful children, and an incredible home. But you never take it for granted, do you, because you've come from your roots that you had?
Well, I think that's part of it. I think that you sit there and you look around at what you've got and what you could have or what you did have, and you think, you know, I'll never ever say, you know, it was a bad time. I always say I've come away from all that. I'm brought my kids up the way kids should be brought up. I was quite firm with them, but never smacked them, never hit them, never had to tell you the truth. And they are fun kids. And now I've got grandkids, which are fun kids as well, and hopefully they're going to grow up the same way. But no, I never take things for granted. I think it's all about hard work. And someone asked me, could you give anybody any advice? I said, well, just go for it and keep going. Don't expect it to land. Just sit there and say, oh, I'm this, I'm that. I'll do the lottery. I might win or I might. You've got to get out there and do it.
What advice would you give for young comics listening now that would maybe like to go down your road rather than this strange, dare I say, alternative? Yes, I will. That. What advice would you give to anyone listening now who's going to really wants to be a comic? Because, first of all, we had somebody on the other night, I'm going to a comic school. Don't go to a comic school. There's no such thing as a comic school.
No. You've either got it in you or you haven't got it in you. It's something like we all want to be footballers, but we can't be because we haven't got the skill. That skill that just makes you stand out above everybody else. I know I was Liverpool A team, and Ian Callaghan was in the team, and Tommy Lawrence were in the team. And you could see these lads were going to make it before you because they had so much talent. So I was probably a wannabe as a footballer. I played in Wales. I found a level anyway. So, and comedy is the same. You can look at somebody and say, this lad's going to make it. Right. There's a lad called Rob Woodward now. He's a friend of Paul's. He's on the Royal Command Performance 3 weeks ago. Absolutely brilliant. The lad's going to make it. Welsh lad, yeah. Rob Woodward.
It's a gift. It's a gift.
It's a gift. Yeah. You know, you go around in the days when we used to go and watch Jackie Hamilton and people like that and say, you know, and Mickey Finn's got her as well. And they've got this special ingredient that you can sort of say, yeah, they're brilliant. You know, they entertain you. Now, if I go to a comedy store now, I don't get entertained. No. I went to America and I saw 5 comics. Everyone was diabolical.
Couldn't agree with you more. Nobody's ever made me laugh over there.
No. So
your advice to somebody who wants to be a comic?
My advice of anyone, just do, listen, today's comedy, it doesn't matter whether us old fogies don't like the comedy. Keep it going because this is modern comedy. This is what the kids want. So keep at it. What I say to them is go and do it every night. If you can have a microphone in your hand, that's your tool. If you to make a big good plumber, you'd have a pair of Stilsons in your hand every day. To be a good welder, you'd have a welder in your hand every day. If you want to be a comedian, pick a microphone up and be on that stage as many times a week you can.
I'm talking to Stan Boardman, who's got a show at the Floral on the 16th of May. It's going to be a really interesting night, a night with Stan. Stan, I've got to ask, because people get shocked when they find out how old you are. You look incredibly young. You've never had any work. You're not that type of person.
No.
Why do you keep so young for your age?
I had 10 years ago, I had a head transplant.
Right.
dear. I don't know. I think it's my mum. My mum had good skin. She was always, she had a great face. She had no wrinkles. She was wonderful. And she was always on her feet, and that's what I am, always on my feet. I don't go jogging. I play five
a side.
You don't
have to. You work in your garden, which is about 300 acres, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. So, come on, how old are you?
I'm 77, I think. Well, it could be 78. 77. Born 1937. 7th of December.
I thought you were 73.
No.
Now you shocked me. Oh, my. Now you have I thought you were 73.
No, I think what happened years ago, the sun, which we will say much about, they did a thing on me. And you know how they get things wrong? right, they got my age wrong. And every other paper has picked that one up ever since.
Wow. So you are how old?
77. 1937. I could be 38 this year.
You've really shocked me.
I could be 78 this year.
You really shocked me. And a fantastic full head of hair.
Yeah, they all there. Well, my mum used to make me eat the crusts.
Absolutely.
And I'll tell you what, it might have been the school dinners as well. School dinners, yeah. You know, they were good them days.
Those days. Well, nothing wrong with lumps and
potatoes. Well, they're telling everybody now, here. And they're telling everybody. What was that one we used to have, which was called Frogsbone? You remember that?
Yeah, Sago.
Sago. Is that what
they
don't have it anymore, yeah. Sago.
What do you want people that are going to go to your night to walk out of that theatre and say?
You still, I think them people, when they walk out there and says, he's still alive. No, the people that come out there to say that going out that night was worth it, you know, and it hasn't been, you know. Sometimes you'll go out to the pictures and you're disappointed with the film and you come in and you get on with it. Sometimes you'll go out to see a show or you go to the pub even and you go, oh, it's bloody miserable in there. I want people to go to this show. I want them to laugh, enjoy themselves and don't sort of sit there. Be part of it. That's what I want them to be, part of this show. And hopefully we might one day video it and put it out on thing. But because that's the modern thing to do, is to film it. I don't think we've had any plans to film it. We might do. There might be cameras there.
Oh,
I don't know yet.
Paul's got to film it. There's no way Paul, your son, could ever sit anywhere without filming something.
Well, Paul's doing very well. He's hopefully he's a chip off the old block, and he's into comedy. He's a good stand-up comedian. He's all over the country at the moment. He's doing five nights a week. He's in Warners, he's at Butlins, he's everywhere. And he's also got his own small production company, and he's made a DVD, and I think you were there, at the Cavern. It's called Comedy from the Cavern.
Tremendous. And he tore the place apart.
Unbelievable.
Tore the place apart. Yeah. He's a beautiful man too. Him and your daughter, they're beautiful people. Yeah. They've got the old values of Liverpool, both been successful in their own right, but have never forgot the grounding that you gave them. Yeah. And Viv, and I must mention Viv, your wife is quirky.
Yeah.
Different. But a great mum.
But the thing is, you know, I'm having the kids, and successful kids are great. And when I was, our first house was a rented accommodation over a betting shop in Knotty Ash. And it was £7.50 a week, which was a lot of money. And I've got, all of a sudden, instead of being Jack the Lad, going all around Liverpool, going around the clubs, going to the Cavern Club, going to the Iron Door, going to all these places and the Cavern, I finished up, I've got twins. I'm married and I've got twins. And I'm on the dole. What can I do? I'm really a bit ashamed that the dole paid for the flat for the few months. And I got myself together, said, that's it, I can't be Jack the Lad anymore. And I think this comes to a lot of people, you know, they stop thinking about themselves, enjoying themselves and think, right, life's about wives, life's about relationships and life's about bringing your kids up. Your kids are the most important things in the world from then on, and not you. And it's a human nature thing, you know. And we finished up in Old Swan. We had a little house, and we still got it, my mum's house in Old Swan. So that Munster Road, that was a lovely house for us, two up, two down. And I brought the kids up in Munster Road until they were five, until I started doing television. And as soon as I did the Opportunity Knocks, the phone never stopped ringing. And, you know, these days, as young comics come along, they can do a million clubs. But one show on television changes people's lives.
Well, if you remember those days, 4 minutes... In those days, well, now it means nothing, but if you were on the Palladium, which you were, if you were at 4 minutes, you were front page of the newspapers as well.
It was, yeah.
It was a different world.
And you get these lads now, because them days only a few shows on. I mean, Opportunity Knocks was probably the big show, Huey Green. It was a little bit like the X Factor now, but it only happened once every 2 years. Now we've got X Factor, we've got Britain's Got Talent. I mean, I think it's the same show in it. Then we got The Voice, and the people turn around on chairs and all the gimmicks that are going on. At the end of the day, you know, you want these people to be successful. And sadly enough, a year down the line, you forgot the names.
Stan Boardman, we've given you a taste today, ladies and gentlemen, with Stan. He's on the floral. It's the 16th of May. You've just had a flavour. You can feel the evening already. I've just been sitting in the theatre listening to Stan, without his bow tie, by the way. and I just can't thank you enough. I never thought I could get you serious. No. I never thought you'd ever do an interview like that. Ever, ever, ever. Thank you so much, Stan Boardman.
Well, just to sort of keep it on that line, there's a BBC doing a show with Ricky Tomlinson, and it's on daytime television, and it's about the May Blitz.
Yes.
So what we've covered there, I probably will cover some of that, and on film, Scotty Road, Kirkdale Road, and Fazakerley Cemetery. And that's going to be out at the end of May, on Ricky Tomlinson's show, on his new daytime show.